The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 24 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to episode 24 of The Catholics of Oz. I should say Happy New Year. We're back after a month's break, and we're very excited to be bringing you content, I should say, from the land of Oz. Joining me today, so I think we should roll out a red carpet, get some trumpets, find me some dancing elephants, I don't know, whatever you have at a parade. Jerry, welcome back to The Catholics of Oz.
Thank you. Very glad to be back here.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had you on the podcast. Caroline and I have been doing, you know, as much as we can without you around. We've done hopefully more than a subpar job, but it's really good to have you back behind the mic.
Thanks.
Funny enough. Yeah, speaking of people being away from their microphones, Caroline won't be joining us for today's episode because she is overseas in New Zealand at the moment. So every year around January time, she heads over for a family trip. So her husband's parents are from New Zealand. So they go once a year and they take the kids along, and she has a bit of a break. So she's been sending lots of lovely photos of her holiday while we sit here in Swelter in Australia, another Aussie summer. We will get her back soon enough. But Jerry, it's good to have you back behind the mics again. So for those of you who are listening, remember, please, to share the Catholics of Oz and share any posts about us on the SQPN Facebook page, and retweet any of our episodes that are advertised on SQPN's Twitter as well. You can leave us comments on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, any of your favorite podcast apps that have a comment section. Please feel free to share and leave us feedback because it helps us to reach more people. Also, SQPN runs our show on YouTube, so if you're listening through YouTube, don't forget to hit the bell so that you can get notifications when new episodes come up. So please, it'd be great to share our episodes with other people and help us to grow our show with other Australians and also with other people around the world. So Jerry, why don't we start with our first topic on Faith Beyond Borders?
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, Father. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one God, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So, Jerry, Maurice, I think... I don't know if there's a media outlet around the world that hasn't been talking about this, but at the moment, Australia is going through a period of some pretty significant bushfires. I mean, we've had lots of pretty serious bushfire seasons in past years as well, but this one has gained a lot of attention. At the moment, a lot of posts I've seen, probably a bit more dramatic than they need to be on Facebook, but people have said things like, Australia is burning. But maybe in some ways it's accurate because most of the states in Australia are experiencing some significant bushfire activity. We've already seen lots of stories about properties lost. There's been lives lost. There's been terrible tragedies in terms of the destruction of environments and animals and all kinds of things that are going on. We just wanted to go through a couple of things, just talking about things that are happening on the ground, I guess, in Australia from our perspective about what's been happening. Now, we haven't been affected by the bushfires. So the closest bushfires, I think, from memory, the town of Bairnsdale is about 200 kilometres away, approximately. Is that...
Yeah, a couple of hours' drive or so.
Yeah. So we're far from the bushfires. The most that we've had has been the smoke, interestingly. We had a couple of days where we had some pretty poor air quality. I've got my little air quality app that's been looking... But you can see the smoke. I mean, we were looking out our windows and it looked like it was similar. I guess the best description would be like a foggy winter's day. And it was pretty thick. And there were lots of warnings about for people with asthma and things like that, it was actually quite dangerous for them to go out during those times. So, Jared, do you want to give us a bit of background on any of the facts or statistics that have come up in terms of this fire, in terms of how it compares to other fires and what's happening at the moment?
Yeah, all right. Well, also, funnily enough, while we said, Bairnsdale was a couple of hours' drive away or so, well, over New Year's, our family and another family were actually on holidays and where we were at East Gippsland, and fortunately out of reach of the fires, but not out of sight. So we could actually see on our horizons, embers and blazes burning. We'd bought our telescope, and when dusk hit at about 9 p.m., we could actually get a view of the fires from the distance. All the weather warnings and everything else did point to us that it was going the other way, at least. So we never were expected to be in any danger. We were surrounded by water on three sides, by big bodies of water, so we weren't in any real worry. But, we were actually a little closer to the action, as it were.
Yeah, so you were in the town of Locksport, which is just a quiet beach town, isn't it?
Yeah.
Literally surrounded, like you said, by water.
Yeah, so it's almost on a peninsula, if you like, sort of one way in on what's known as 90 Mile Beach in the southeast of Victoria. So, as I said, surrounded by water on each side. The main fires were probably more in the mainland and further east in the state. So having had a quick look, Wikipedia updates this each day, and there'll be other websites that do the same. In terms of how much has burned, we're talking about, 10 or 11 million hectares, 36 million acres, which is humongous. I think for the time it's been burning, that's probably not all that surprising. Almost 6,000 buildings, 29 people as of yesterday, so the 11th of January, which comparatively is a little lower. Obviously, no lives lost would be the ideal outcome. Well, no fires would be the ideal outcome.
Would be the perfect outcome, wouldn't it?
But we have had bushfires in Australia where the loss of life has been more severe.
So the Black Saturday bushfires, from memory, I think 174 lives were lost.
Yes.
Now we had, did we have a Royal Commission or a something? There was, there was a massive, they do like the forensics afterwards and they look at what happened and how did it happen. I think, and I'm pretty sure since Black Saturday, there are better processes. Like, for example, we didn't have the Vic emergency app, and the other state emergency apps that existed, that exist now. We didn't have those at the time, but now we do, and now we can get warnings about, even a local fire down the road from us would pop up on the app, and you know that there was something going on.
Yeah, so while we were on our holiday, we did keep that app handy, and we were never inside. Yep. We weren't even inside the danger zone.
Yes,
despite the fact that we could see it, the winds and weather conditions were pushing it the other directions.
Yeah,
but yes, things like that, and then they obviously noted where it took place and what caused it to occur, and. We're 10, 11 years later now. There's always going to be lessons to be learned, I guess, in these sort of circumstances.
Yeah. Now, the other thing to note is that parts of Australia have been going through drought, and this has been since last year. So before the fire season had started, the main focus of a lot of charities, fundraisers, awareness raising activities around Australia had been actually about supporting our farmers. And there are lots of initiatives, for example, to raise funds to get, for example, hay out to their animals and feed and things like that, because a lot of our farmers were actually struggling with drought. Now, drought is very bad in bushfire season because there is lots of dry fuel. It just makes a fire situation worse. And now the drought plus the fires have basically turned into the situation that we see today. So from the fires, I know we've got a few different resources in front of us, but what has stood out for you, Jerry, as some of the most significant events that have happened, like, for example, whether it's a town that's been affected or something that you've noticed on the news that's been talked about a lot?
Well, I suppose we'll talk about specific articles here, but one thing that I have noticed or have been told was that a coworker, actually her sister, was actually in Mallacoota, one of the affected towns, and they were one of the people who had to be. I think they ended up getting. I can't remember if they got airlifted out or the Navy actually to get them, but they had two young children with them. They couldn't leave when a bunch of the other people actually left. So it was a bit of a hairy time for them because they were just out there. I think house sitting.
Yes.
So that's probably as close and personal as it's going to get for me. Fortunately, another thing that's really standing out for me is that they're just not going out. Our previous bushfires around the country have always focused on a point in time. So you talked about Black Saturday. that was one day out of the year where temperatures were, you know, in excess of 45 degrees Celsius, which it's over 100 in Fahrenheit. I don't know the exact translation. That was one day, and then a cool change hit and the fire seemed to dampen down. Ash Wednesday, which predates us, at least our knowledge of it, I was, I think, in the womb, and you were probably a year or so old.
Yeah, yep.
You know, it's one day of the year where obviously the devastation was at its peak. These ones, you know, when we learned to look it up, a lot of these have actually been going on since, late last year. And I'm not talking December, I'm talking our spring. So they've talked about it since September. So this, it's not so much the intensity of it and anything else like that. It's the amount of time it's actually been burning without going out.
Yeah, and some of these fires are just out of control. There's just nothing that can be done about them. And I think from what I understand, one of the strategies the firefighters have been using is to wait for cool change days or better weather days, and they set up containment lines or they'll do a bit of backburning or something to try and get some control back. But there have just been fires that are out of control. As of today or yesterday or a couple of days ago, there were two fire fronts that joined into a massive fire as well in Victoria. So there's been some really crazy stuff going on with the fires this time around. On the town of Mallacoota, that's probably been the one that, and I reckon probably it's had some international attention as well. But when it got to the point where it was too late to leave, so basically people are told, if you haven't left now, you can't leave. You know, the roads are going to be too dangerous or closed because of whatever. So they basically went to, now, is it a lake or a beachfront? But they were on the shore of...
Yeah, they're a beach town.
Yeah. So they were basically on the beach. and that was where they were going to stay. That's what they were told. And they were told, if the fire is about to overwhelm, get into the water. That's basically it. And they had some firefighters that stayed with them that said that they will, you know, they will basically defend the people and as much property as they possibly can. But some of the images that came out of Mallacoota, for example, they showed because, you know, our national broadcaster, the ABC, they kind of become the emergency channel and emergency radio broadcaster as well when things like this happen. So they were showing images, and there were images of a family on a boat in a lake in Mallacoota, and it was daytime and it looked like night. It was almost black. The sky was black and red basically from all the smoke from fires and whatever. And, you know, there was, you know, parents and there were kids in boats with, you know, masks on to protect them from the smoke and everything. And the people of Mallacoota eventually, and I'm pretty sure it's still going on, but yeah, like you said, the Navy had to be called in to basically evacuate them on ships and by helicopters and whatever else they could. And it's a slow process. I think they started with, you know, more vulnerable, you know, elderly and obviously children, and then they move on from there. But and from what I understand, it's not entirely safe to be around that region still. They're still a bit worried about some of the dangers from fire as well. Yeah.
Mallacoota is, you know, it's one of the holiday towns. So we've known people that will go to Mallacoota as the place to set up and spend time, because as well as being a beach town, I think it's got a little bit of an internal lake system. I've mm-hmm. never been there, but it's one of those places that's a destination, and obviously it was probably a lot more crowded than it would have been at other times of the year.
Yep. At one point when they knew the fires were getting close, not just to Mallacoota, but Lakes Entrance and some of these, you know, it's all these holiday towns that we can think of in that area, in East Gippsland, I think there were, you know, people were told, if you're on holidays, leave, and about 30,000 people evacuated. A whole bunch of holiday makers didn't leave. They decided, they said, you know, it was on the news, I've paid for this holiday, I'm staying. And some of them, I mean, Lake's Entrance ended up being less dangerous after, you know, not so long, but there were serious fears that it could actually also be affected by fire as well.
That was while we were away. We actually had the evacuate warning come for Bairnsdale and Lake's Entrance, to probably the two major towns nearest geographically, although separated by quite a large body of water, so not all that dangerous. And there was actually, I believe Lake's Entrance was told, you know, you can't leave now.
Yes.
For a period of time. Then obviously the threat lifted because of the directions of the fire changed.
Yeah. So why don't we just talk about a couple of stories just on the ground, particularly we're talking about this as our Faith Beyond Borders topic because we wanted to talk about the Catholic Church's involvement in some of the events that are going on. So we wanted to start with a story. This is it's a sad story. There's no other way to talk about it. But a mass was held for a member of the Rural Fire Service. His name was Andrew O'Dwyer. Now, what happened was Andrew O'Dwyer was a firefighter, and during the fires, just tragically, his fire truck rolled. I think it was hit by a fallen tree or something, and it rolled and it killed him, basically. And this was a very sad story that came out. I think 4 firefighters have died overall so far, but he was the first one. And his funeral was held at Our Lady of Victory's Horsley Park in Sydney on the 7th of January. And I guess we're asking for prayers for him and his family, because essentially he's left behind a wife and a 19-month-old daughter. And it's just a very tragic thing, particularly in the way that he did die. At the mass, we had the Prime Minister there, as well as significant members of the Rural Fire Service and other politicians. And we'll actually leave a link to the article from the Catholic Weekly, which is a Sydney Catholic publication. We'll leave that in our show notes so that people can read about it and see photos from there as well. At the mass, he was posthumously awarded the Commissioner's Commendation for Extraordinary Service and the Commissioner's Commendation for Bravery as well. And also, he was given international recognition, and the Wildland Fire Association in, I hope I say this right, in Boise, Idaho, in the United States, also awarded him as well. And as a side note, I should also mention that we've had firefighters coming from New Zealand, the United States, I believe Canada as well, but certainly from different parts of the world to assist in fighting the fires. There are 1,000 and something, you know, people who are putting their lives on the line to protect properties and protect lives as well, and some of them sadly losing their lives as well. On the news, there was a video of American firefighters arriving in Sydney and receiving huge rounds of applause at the airport as they got off their planes and went off to fight the fires. I also wanted to mention that the parish priest who said the mass, Father Dominic Din, he spoke beautifully. And he said, "We all have to face death one day in our life, so it's wise to prepare for it." And I believe Andrew had prepared by the way that he lived his life. Faith tells us death is not the end. Andrew, you are at home with Jesus and you're at home with God. And that mass was attended, it was packed and it was attended by over 800 people. So prayers for him and for his family, because there are some difficult days ahead for them as well. So is there anything you wanted to say about that story, or should we move on to the next our next story?
There's probably not a whole lot to add. This is probably one of the more unpleasant parts of when we were researching these and looking through this. Is when I saw the headline, I thought, I just don't want to read about this because it's not going to.
It's a hard read. I agree. It's a hard read.
But it is something that, you know, we are all sharing as Australians. You know, we potentially, we can say we're lucky that we're out here, perhaps in the suburbs rather than the country, and we're not affected by these fires. But we are. As an Australian, as a human being, we're affected by this in some way, and you know, this is one that's probably going to take its toll. I've looked at his age; he's the same age as I was.
Yeah.
He's got a child less than 2 years, and so, it's probably hitting a bit closer to home in this instance, just because all of a sudden these people are my age, and these things are happening.
Yeah. Now, just continuing with the church community on the ground, we found an article from the Catholic Leader, which from memory, I think is, I think it's a Queensland based Catholic production. Having said that, anyway, they had some people interviewing some local parish priests in New South Wales, and they were talking about some of the things that they've seen as well. Jerry, did you get a chance to have a look at this? Are there any thoughts about this article?
I did quickly look through that one. Again, that was probably more, so obviously we're from Victoria, so New South Wales is a little more remote to us, but yes, that's probably more focused on the southeast areas of New South Wales, so not too far away. Basically, you're talking about how the whole Catholic community is sort of pulling together. He even speaks proudly about Sunday Mass going ahead in Bega, one of the towns that are affected.
Yep.
Talking about the amount of darkness. So we mentioned Mallacoota and the red black sky. They've got the same sort of conditions there. Smoke turning the sky to red and black because of the amount of smoke in the air.
Yeah. I was just reading about Father Verrill, who was talking about some of his parishioners as well.
That might have been him, yeah.
Yeah, and so interestingly, some of his parishioners are actually firefighters, and he was saying that they've been fighting the fires, but they've also lost their homes and properties at the same time. So they're continuing to fight fires despite the fact that they've lost property. Some of them, he said, were farmers, and they've lost their farm properties. They've lost their livestock in some cases, and some of their livestock, they have to put them down because there's nothing for them to eat, which is really tragic. So I know that this is a heartbreaking thing for farmers to have to do when they can't look after their stock. And there's just nothing that they can do to change that situation. He spoke to a parishioner who lost their house, and he said that they had no insurance on their house, and he said that his heart sank. There's no coming back from that, sadly, which is a really sad thing to hear. And then he said the other thing is that there'll be people who will move, like who they've lost their properties and they're probably going to leave town and go somewhere, you know, somewhere more close to the suburbs or the cities now. And he said that loss is something that is devastating as well, losing parishioners, small towns losing significant people as well. And he said, but there will be some who stay. And he said, those who stay have to be very patient now, waiting for builders. They have to go through their anniversary, significant events, and daily reminders of tragedy that they've gone through as they try to put their lives back together again. And he said, there are those who have lost everything and those who have saved everything. There's a disparity because you've got some, you know, fire doesn't choose, does it? It destroys some properties, and by some miracles, other people's properties just happen to not be touched at all. And so that you're going to have that as well. So if we're done talking about this, why don't we go to the church's national response now? So what happened was as the fire started, different bishops started making different statements about support and whatever that they'll offer. When the scope of the fires became more and more apparent, the Australian bishop said, we're going to make a coordinated response now. So did you want to say anything about the letter, which again, we'll put in our show notes as well. Did you want to say anything about the letter which describes the national response from the Catholic Church now?
Yep. So this is the one from Mark Coleridge.
Yep.
At this stage, yeah.
So he's the president of the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference, basically. So speaking on their behalf.
Yep. Now, is he still based in Brisbane?
Yes, correct.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, because we've had him, we've spoken about him previously on the show. So yep. Definitely remember that. So, so as you said, they got together, they were together, and they obviously brought in a national response. And some of those things are going to be a national network that connects people that are affected by the bushfires with people that can help. And so tasks such as preparing meals, clearing properties, rebuilding, and pastoral and counselling support. I noticed at our Sunday Mass this morning that I think the St. Vinny's sent off just some food and...
Yep.
Something else they sent off.
So what happened was just
to sidetrack briefly.
Yeah. No. So the St. Vinny's Society asked for volunteers to prepare a couple of things. So what happened was in the car park this morning after church, I just happened to bump into the husband of the president of our branch, and he was telling me what happened. I was asking him some questions. So basically, they were asked to prepare food, sanitary products, anything that could be sent along that would be helpful. So last weekend, I think it was, members of the St. Vinny's team for our parish got together. They prepared everything that they were asked to do. And then he took all those to, there was a local relief center just here in our suburb. And then that relief center was going to take it all to the fire affected areas. So even that, just boots on the ground, people just doing things that they can to make a difference there.
Yeah. Now they've also talked about there's going to be distribution of special prayers and resources for the use in our parishes.
Yep.
Collaborating with some of the national agencies, so as well as St. Vincent de Paul's, probably the one people are most familiar with. There's also the Catholic Health Australia, Catholic Social Services Australia, National Catholic Education Commission, among others. So on Australia Day, 26th of the Australia Day weekend, so Australia Day is the 26th of Jan, so there'll be a special collection taken up that weekend, so we've got a couple of weeks until that lands, and that will be donated to Vinny's Bushfire Appeal.
Yeah, so, essentially, basically, they've just activated every single resource that they've got that can help to make a difference. So they talked about how some Catholic agencies had boots on the ground that were assessing fire-affected areas. So basically, the Catholic response is looking at what to do now that fires have swept through certain towns and people are there with nothing, or people are waiting for builders or whatever else. So basically offering that. There'll be a lot of people in Catholic parishes that need support, people who are not Catholic who will receive this kind of support as well. But basically what they were saying is, please, you know, pray. They've actually prepared prayers, which if I can find the link to it, I think there is a link actually in this in the bishop's letter. Yeah. So there's prayers for the bushfires. If people could join us in praying those, that would be really good. And then they've also asked for action as well. So we've seen this action. In fact, there came a point where some agencies were saying, can you please stop sending us clothes and other resources because we just can't sort them. The best way now to support us is to send money where we can then buy and distribute ourselves. So there's all kinds of things. Outside of the Catholic Church, there's been all kinds of people who have donated as well. I think there was an Australian celebrity, I forgot who they were, who started a bushfire appeal and said, can we raise how many thousands of dollars? And she ended up getting $20 million raised at once.
I think it's still going. I think it's probably kicked on higher than that too.
Yeah, so that basically just went viral in a good way, which is really good to see. I remember last year when, so at the end of the year last year, at the end of the school year, so there were fires going on and there was already some asking for support. This is before the bushfire season became what it did. And it was Grilled, one of my favorite burger places to go to. They joined up with the St. Vincent de Paul Society because the St. Vinny's already had their bushfire appeal going. And they said, it was an Instagram post, for every love heart comment that we get on this Instagram post, we'll donate, I think it was 10 cents, up to the amount of how many thousands of dollars it was going to be. So we had about 3 or 4 days of school left with our students. So we had permission and said, you know, students, if you have Instagram accounts, I know this is going to sound strange because normally we say, don't do this, but can you open them, please? Can you hop here? We'll put the link in the school bulletin so students could access it straight away, and got them all to leave their love hearts. And our justice and liturgy captains were telling me that lots of their friends were doing that. So that was good. You know, Vinny's was, you know, teaming up with a fast food place in order to get some funds that way as well. So there are lots. There have been international celebrities. One of the Hemsworth brothers did something. Russell Crowe donated a whole lot of money. It's just amazing to see some of the responses. I didn't know this, but, you know, and people who are listening, whether you love him or don't like him, I'm not getting political now, but our previous Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, is actually a member of the, he's a firefighter as well, like a volunteer. And photos were cropping up of him in his uniform and fighting fires too. So really interesting how different people from different walks of life, you know, really high and all the way down to the ground as well, have all been doing stuff to help out as well.
Yeah, another one that's made a donation, it's probably one of the larger donations as well, is a man named Andrew Forrest.
Yes.
Now, I think we covered him. I can't remember if it was actually on one of our previous Catholics of Oz podcasts or our previous incarnation, but I think we covered him when we were doing a bit about slavery.
Correct.
And he's I think the CEO or the you know, top dog of a mining company, which must be doing okay because the amount of money he's thrown in. And he has had form. He's not a one that holds on to all his wealth. He has mm-hmm. had form in terms of donating, and this is another, you know, another good example there.
Yes, and he's so he started a campaign against human slavery, and he, I think at one stage he actually got Pope Francis's endorsement, or he partnered with the Catholic Church on that one as well. Yeah, so he's certainly one who's literally put his money where, not literally, but, you know, he's put his money where his mouth is in order to help. And, you know, that contribution to the bushfires is going to make a massive difference as well. So I guess to wrap it up, I mean, all we're asking for, I guess, is prayers. And if you would like to make donations to the St. Vincent de Paul Society in Australia, we'll put a link to their bushfire appeal. They actually have a list on their page of, you know, it says, you know, $50 will feed a family, I think, for a week, and this much money will do this and this much money will do that. So I'll make sure to put a link to that in our show notes as well. Jerry, is there anything else you wanted to add before we move on to our next topic?
I suppose all of you who listen, you know, your prayers are much appreciated, because in terms of the intensity, they've well, it's going to get called lots and lots of things over the coming days and months, but the fact that it's just dominating news and dominating everything that we're dealing with, the fact that it just keeps on going and going, well, we'd love some prayers for it to stop, whether it's being breaking by rain or the fires are able to put it out or a matter of both.
Yeah. Yep. Good points. All right. So, and if there are any, if there's anyone who's listening who's been following the news, whether in Australia or overseas, and you have some thoughts about the fires or stories that you that you'd like to share, we'd be more than happy to add those to our podcast in the future as well. All right, so let's change direction now, and let's talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science!
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, as you may, if you've listened to science segments before, Jared and I tend to try not to delve too much into very heavy scientific content because we usually get a rap on the knuckles from Caroline about all the things that we didn't do so well.
Usually gets her back pretty quick.
Yeah, that's right. Usually that's one way to race it back to the podcast. But when it comes to science and faith, we certainly do love talking about that topic. So at the end of last year, on December 27th, there was an article in Crux that caught my attention, and this was an interview with Stacey, I hope I say her surname correctly, Stacey Trisankos. So basically, I'll just share the blurb about her. She's a convert to Catholicism and an internationally recognized author, speaker, and educator on the topic of theology and science. She has a PhD in chemistry and a master's in dogmatic theology. She is the executive director of the St. Philip Institute of Catechesis and Evangelization in the Diocese of Tyler and a teaching fellow for the Bishop Robert Barron's New Word on Fire Institute, regularly appearing on Catholic Answers Live to answer questions about faith and science. She's the author of Particles of Faith, Science Was Born of Christianity, and 20 Answers by Bioethics. And she also has a student edition of her Particles of Faith book, which has just been published, which is, I'm assuming, why this interview took place at all. Now, just so you know, once I read this article, I actually bought a copy of Particles of Faith on my Kindle, and I plan to go through it because it sounds really interesting. It also sounds like it might be a little bit above me in some places in terms of the science content, according to her description. But basically, we thought this would be interesting because she has a really firm an unshakable belief about the relationship between faith and science. And I actually wanted to pull out a quote that really struck me. And it struck me so much that I can't find it right now. So here it is. It's a beautiful quote. She says this: "The articles of faith are based on divine revelation. The particles of faith are discovered in creation." So this beautiful relationship that she says about faith and science is basically that is that everything we understand about faith is through God's revelation. So Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, became the incarnate Word of God and divinely revealed to us a lot of things that, you know, for us to know about God, how to relate to God, and about how to know God through His church. But then she goes on to say that the physical matter of creation helps us to know God as well. She calls these the particles of faith. So what we discover in creation is really a discovery of what God has done as well. So, Jared, are there any little insights from this article that stuck out to you in terms of faith and science or anything about her story?
Well, it was interesting to read her progression, firstly, towards the, I think she calls it scientism.
Yes.
Growing up and being exposed to the wonders of science. So even the simplicity of nature, she understands all the things that work just in a simple leaf of a plant or a tree. And her desire to find out more and more about that, including, I think in one part she talks about the use of, I think it was a photosynthesis.
Correct.
Not a nice word to say. and being able to use that for energy as opposed to fossil fuels. Whatever you think of greenhouse gases, climate change, and fossil fuels, they are a finite thing that can't be created or renewed.
True.
Renewables at some stage, 1 year from now, 10 years from now, 200,000 years from now, are going to be what's going to be needed for energy. And so that was one of her goals, is to do that. And she had, I like how she thought that science was going to answer everything for her. Chemistry was going to answer everything, biology, etc. And it was only when she was, so she does mention, I think the first time she sort of found a chink in her armor in that is she was having a string of failed experiments. And then one day she looked upon the same tree that she had explored in her youth when she was, so I mentioned about the trees. And you know, the simplicity and the of not simplicity, the complexity within a simple leaf on a certain tree. I can't remember the name of the tree. But she saw, her gaze fell on that tree, and she got a bit annoyed and angry. That was it was the start, I suppose. But it wasn't until many years later she actually, you know, did go down the path of conversion. Because obviously the questions that were once able to be answered purely by science, you know, stop being able to be eventually. They became too much for it.
Yeah, and that moment from the tree, it took 15 years, she said, before she actually then became a person of faith, or you know, or finished her journey on her way to faith. It was interesting that she said when I was in my 30s, I finally came to terms with the fact that science could not answer the most important questions about being human, those about purpose, meaning, and love. Intellectual conversion was not difficult. It's rather obvious to any scientist that a designer is behind the order in nature. But personally, it was terrifying. To a chemist, God does not just know the number of hairs in your head. He knows where every electron is in every atom, in every keratin protein that makes up the hair on your head. He knows the entire trajectory of every gas molecule you breathe in. He orchestrates all the chemical reactions that cause your heart to beat one more time. And he knows your heart, your inner life, your sins, your personal failures. I think it's a beautiful paragraph on the, again, how a person of science can also be a person of faith. She, earlier in her life, basically, like you said before, she accepted that idea of scientism, that science will answer everything. It's where all knowledge is found. But then obviously, like you said, was humbled to find out at some stage that that's actually not the case. And I think this is probably one of the most convincing things for me that says that science can't solve everything, is that science can't measure certain things. So, for example, you can't ask the question, is there a God, and prove it or disprove it with science. Science can neither prove or disprove if there's a God or not, it might be able to prove traces of things, you know, like particles, you know, like that, you know, and when I say particles, I mean, you investigate creation and go, look, creation is ordered. That could be evidence of God, but it can't tell you definitively that there is this, you know, all-powerful everything that we know as God. It can't measure love at all. You can test the chemistry of love for sure, but you can't test the idea of love, you know, because love goes beyond just, you know, the idea of an attraction between two people and the chemicals that go on there, or the, again, this is me trying to get scientific, all right, but you know, but beyond that, what makes us love each other beyond the physical realm, you know, things like that. It can't measure things like that. So I think that's quite interesting. I remember watching, what was that film called? The space one, Interstellar. That's what it was. Good. I'm glad I remember that. And there's this part where Anne Hathaway's character is talking about how love is this thing that connects people over distance. Because I think she was trying to find her husband who was on another planet far, far away. Someone else who's watched it more recently than me will be able to answer it. But there was this thing that she says about love. And how love, strangely, is one thing that can connect people over. It doesn't matter what the distance is. Like your proximity to someone, you know, whether you're further away from them or right up close, doesn't diminish or increase the love that you have for them. The love that you have is always constantly there. But there's no scientific measure for that, if that makes sense. Here we are getting philosophical now. Yeah, so I thought that was a really interesting article. Is there anything else that you wanted to throw out from here, Jerry?
Maybe just near the end. So she they talk a bit about Christmas, because obviously the date.
Yes. Yep.
This was published, I think, was just after Christmas last year. The line that I like. And of course, I'm probably not going to be able to find it, because it's quite a decent sized article.
Yeah.
A fair read. So when we say we can't find the line we want to say, it's because the article's quite long and we're scrolling frantically on our screens to try and get to it. Okay, so she's mentioned here so that God revealed that he is triune, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. So through an act of intellect, the Father generates the Son, the Word. Through an act of will, the Father and the Son spirate forth the Holy Spirit. Mm. And so as rational creatures, body and soul, we're made in the image and likeness of God with the same spiritual powers of intellect and free will, although limited. So paraphrasing her there.
Yeah.
So I liked how she spoke there on that. And then secondly, and this is probably one where they sort of finished up with was a family member. So advice for a family member whose roadblock to connecting or reconnecting with the church
yes.
involves a perceived conflict with science, because that's pretty much her. That's her in a nutshell, right there.
Yes.
She talks about encouraging them to dive more into the science side of things, which might seem a little bit strange, and I suppose counterintuitive, but her answer for that is to say, join them in the quest for the knowledge of creation, lead them to the edge of what science can reveal, and be a friend when they allow themselves to see what lies beyond the confinements of nature.
Yeah, I think that's good, because she was talking about the idea that, you know, why are young people, for example, struggling with faith, you know, when they're presented with science? And she was, just on that point you were making, she said that basically in schools, their heads are being crammed with facts, you know, the facts of science, which is great. But she said lots of people move on with their lives into science, and they continue just learning, like, for example, relearning the chemistry, you know, that has been around for ages, relearning whatever it is. And they spend lifetimes just relearning science rather than developing anything new. And so because of that that stale kind of science, there is no going deeper, like you said, you know, going deeper into science. There is no trying to understand or working out, oh my gosh, everything is actually ordered in creation. Maybe, you know, there could be an intellect that actually just, you know, put all that together. Because if it's not intellect, it is the sheerest, dumbest of luck and coincidence that we have an ordered, you know, universe, and we're able to be here and exist. She was saying that, that going deeper into science will actually reveal more about the creator than simply just relearning, you know, facts and whatever else. In a way, just reading it, my reflection of this article was that if we're just relearning the facts of science, we're doing a disservice, because we're learning. You know, we're doing a disservice to science, because we're learning science just to make things and just to do the same thing over and over again, you know, just to produce products in an industry or whatever else. But science without wonder is really just slavery, really. That's my reflection anyway. People are welcome to call me out on that if they want to, but that's what I reckon. You know, without the wonder that's attached to science, it's just a product. It's not even an activity. It's like you're just. Yeah,
well, what's the end goal to get to?
Yeah.
So, like what she was talking about, what I mentioned earlier, was that she wanted to use it to harness energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the energy of the sun, it falls all around us. And how's it being? You know, you've got some grid, power grids and turbines and panels that pick it up. But by and large, the sun's energy hits the earth and then what? It's not harnessed or used.
Yeah. Yep.
And so her end game with that. I suppose what I like about how her way of approaching this with a skeptic is that it encourages them to see the limitations of science. So if you've got someone, and she probably tells it from her own experience as well, if you've got someone who's thinks science will answer everything, then encourage them into that.
Yes.
Well, not so much into that, but if you encourage them to enter into greater dialogue with the sciences as what's known, eventually, I suppose you perceive that they'll hit a roadblock and say, well, science can't answer this question I've got. May it be about love, be it about relationships, be it about something that, as you said, science cannot measure.
Yep. And she says that forces you to open your minds now to other possibilities, because there are other things within creation that science can't touch, but philosophy, for example, can, and faith can, and other ways to measure a reality in existence that will help us to understand the full picture of creation rather than just simply, the scientism answer. That was a very bad sentence, but you get what I'm trying to say there. All right. I've got my copies of Particles of Faith. I plan to read it. Jerry, I'll have to get a copy over to you. And Carol,
is that the student version, or you got the real?
No, I'm going for the grown up. I'm going to get my mind destroyed by science.
Going straight to the top level.
Yeah, I want to go the whole hog. I did actually mention it to Caroline, and she got excited about it. So she does want to talk about it in a future episode. So we'll read it slowly, and we'll when we find the time, we'll sit when all three of us together, we'll go deeper into that text. And I feel like Caroline might take over. And I know she's listening. All right. So let's move on to our next topic. So we actually wanted to talk about entertainment.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
This is not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan. You've got a plan. I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So, Jerry, last year, you and I and a couple of friends went to go and watch Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Now, you've actually seen it twice by sheer luck, because I think you you had a work function at the end of the year, and it just so happened that's what you got to see as colleagues, yeah?
Yeah, work breakup decided that they hadn't heard us talking much about going to see the movie, so that'd be a good idea for a breakup. As it turned out, that was a 40-something degree day, our work breakup day, so that turned out to be an inspired idea to take us into air-conditioned cinemas.
Perfect.
As opposed to outdoor dining or something like that.
Yep. And then you and I and a couple of other friends and family, we had already bought tickets to IMAX because this is our tradition. So the really, really big movies, like Star Wars movies, for example, we go to IMAX in Melbourne, you know, because it has, you can book your seats online, which is really good too. And we go and watch them there, and we lose our eardrums and our eyesight for a couple of days with all the big sounds in 3D.
And the largest screen in, they didn't have the advertising this year, but they usually have advertising saying they're the largest screen in the Southern Hemisphere or the fifth largest in the world. But we didn't actually get any of that this year, but saw it on the big, big screen.
Yeah. And I should also mention as a side note that we were accompanied or serenaded outside afterwards by Darth Vader playing heavy
metal. Darth Shredder,
playing heavy metal tunes of Star Wars
on
his bass guitar. And what did the sign say? Raising funds for a new Death Star or something like along those lines. Yeah, all these joke Star Wars signs. But we just wanted to provide a very short, non-spoilery review. And like, we know that some of you haven't seen it. And if you do want a review with spoilers, then can I encourage you to go and check out Secrets of Star Wars? The team there did have a great discussion. It was a really good discussion. And on Secrets of TV and Movies, and I think it also ended up in the Secrets of Star Wars feed, our CEO, Dom Bettinelli, along with Father Chip, went along to see it for their coffee and cinema episode. And so they do like a 10-15 minute non-spoiler review, and then they do another like spoiler-filled review straight after that as well. So just to add our thoughts, Jerry, do you want to go first? You've seen it twice, so give me your perspective.
Well, I suppose my perspective, so as you said, seen it twice, seeing it the second time allowed me to look at things that I couldn't understand the first time and then realize how they might have played out, or you know, how such a thing was able to come about, such as, for example, something happened and then, you know, old bait and switch, suddenly what we all thought it happened didn't happen.
Yeah, a lot of misdirection in this film, isn't there?
Yeah, and then I was able to actually see the second time of viewing it how such a thing could occur, which, you know, a split-second screenshot sort of gave the answer to that. So I hate doing non-spoiler reviews.
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be so careful of what comes out of your mouth. Okay, so obviously it's the Rise of Skywalker. So it's the wrap-up of the Skywalker saga, which is no surprise there. The third movie of the third trilogy, wrapping the whole story up. We got reintroduced to Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's in.
Yeah, no spoiler. That's in the trailer. Yeah, yeah.
That's in the trailer.
Yeah.
And on Fortnite, apparently, if you're playing it.
Oh gosh. Oh goodness.
Which we didn't get that message. No. We haven't created our accounts just yet.
No.
To get that.
Probably still not going to. But anyway.
Yeah. So therefore we got the driving force, because I suppose at the end of The Last Jedi, with Adam Driver's character Kylo killing Snoke, who seemed to be the big bad guy, suddenly there was no big bad guy anymore.
Yeah.
There was just a huge army.
Yeah.
But no supreme leader, if you like.
Yeah.
And then so we got Palpatine being back. So that sorted that out. I believe it's set, was it a year after current events?
Yep.
So episodes 7 and 8 were one after the other pretty much.
Yeah.
And this one had a bit of break in between. So it's you know, obviously things have moved on since the last scene of The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
I suppose without going into detail, the three amigos, Finn, Poe, and Rey spend a lot more time together this time, which Was obviously one of the criticisms. There was a lot more separation last time. It's a lot more camaraderie.
Yeah,
this time.
It took a long time for those three to finally start having adventures. I mean, it took two films really for them to actually start having adventures together, which was strange.
When you think about 4, 5, and 6, there was a lot. Yes, Luke spent a bit of time on his own.
Yeah,
etc. But there was always
he had to become a Jedi. I mean, come on.
there was always a joining together, and they spent a lot of time on the same screen as each other. The interaction and those sort of interactions. You got anything to say? Because I'm trying to think of something. And then every time I think of something to say,
yeah.
Oh, wait, that's going to be a spoiler.
Yeah, a couple of things. I enjoyed the movie a lot. I really did. I liked it. I liked what they did with it. I loved the characters, and there were a lot of great character moments that these characters needed to have, I think, which was good. I think for some of us, we were waiting for a long time for these character moments to happen, so that was great. And I think we have a nice complete trilogy now. I've enjoyed all three films. It may not be popular to say, but I actually enjoyed The Last Jedi a lot as well, although I do acknowledge that there were some parts that were really clunky, like the whole Canto bite. I still don't get what the point of that was.
I feel like there's a lot of
giving Finn something to do.
A lot of film reel wasted in that.
There were wasted characters. I mean, you know, and we'll talk about Last Jedi now, sorry, but you know, Captain Phasma was brought back again. She was wasted in the first film and re-wasted in the second film. And you know, I was very upset that Admiral Akbar was wasted completely. Like
everyone has that.
That's unforgivable. His death was unforgivable. I don't mind him dying. I do mind the way that he died. Anyway, but the point I'm trying to get across is that the Last Jedi, you know, went against subverted our expectations, which I thought was actually one of the strengths of the film in a way. And then left all these threads, and so I presumed that we were going to now have an unforgivable Kylo Ren in The Rise of Skywalker. I actually thought the whole idea of The Last Jedi was now to set Kylo Ren up as the big bad guy who was going to be the Skywalker that would not be redeemed, because we always see the redemption of Skywalkers and, you know, Skywalker family being important. But I think J.J. Abrams wasn't comfortable with that happening. I think the weakness of this trilogy, if there was one weakness, is that it seemed to me that it wasn't planned from start to end, you know, well. You know, there were lots of, you know, for example, it seemed pretty obvious that the bringing back of Palpatine was, you know, because they needed a big bad and they didn't want it to be, you know, Ben Solo. Now, people can argue that episode 4, 5, and 6 were not planned from start to end. You know, George Lucas had ideas, but there were lots of changes. So, for example, he didn't know that Darth Vader was going to be Luke and Leia's father, you know, until episode 5. I don't think he really knew that Luke and Leia were going to be brother and sister until episode 6, you know, hence the awkward kiss and the kind of love interest stuff that goes on in the previous episodes. So, you know, that people can use that as a counter argument, but you'd think they would have learned their lessons in a way.
I feel like it's slightly different in this time in that The Force Awakens raised questions,
yeah,
and The Last Jedi, not so much didn't answer them, but told us they weren't important.
Yeah,
and I think that's the difference.
Yes, yeah.
2, 4, 5, and 6
which grates fans pretty badly. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's why the film was so divisive. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what? Rise of Skywalker was walk into McDonald's and get all the answers. Now, wasn't it? It was like the fast food of answers in a way, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, they basically had to be, unless you got Peter Jackson to direct it.
5 hours
yeah,
long.
Yeah, yeah, a lot to cream in.
Yeah. Now, I've heard rumors that there might be a new cut of the film with an extra 20 or 30 minutes of footage to add things that J.J. Abrams wanted that Disney said you can't put in because it makes the film too long and things like that. So I think there is an end game length version of the film that they have been talking about. Now, if we'll see it or not, who knows? But it would be interesting to see that cut and see what it does. I mean, if it adds anything to the film or if it does just make it bloated and long or whatever. Yeah. Overall, I'd say it's a worthy addition to the Star Wars franchise. I think all of the films, even the one with Jar Jar Binks, I think they've all been worthy additions in some way or another. They've all given us something. I think The Rise of Skywalker gave me a lot and left me with a couple of gaps in terms of, oh, okay, because they could have done this and they could have. It just keeps me thinking about the distraction I have is, did J.J. Abrams, was he trying to fill in a gap and fix something from The Last Jedi that he wasn't too happy about? Or did he pick up the threads of The Last Jedi and just say, well, actually, this is what's going to happen next? There's a lot of a lot of explainers to get around a couple of awkward things that we can't talk about because it's full of spoilers.
I think, although, we all found it was a fitting end, though.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I did enjoy it. Yeah, lots of good moments. There is the, non-spoiler, there's one scene which grabbed my heartstrings and pulled like anything. And, okay, here's without spoiling it. It's kind of a reflection of a scene from episode 7. It's kind of like the same.
I'm with you.
All right, so it's the same scene, but changed. And I thought it was fantastic. That for me was one of the, if you know when you go back over a movie, you like look over your favorite scenes when you want to. Like if I could go back to a favorite scene, that would be my absolute favorite. I thought it was beautifully done and there's a surprise in that scene, which I can't talk about. But there's this great surprise in this scene, in how that happens. That was really hard to talk about without spoiling it. But you can listen to Secrets of Star Wars to get that. Or you can go see the film.
I'm sure they talked about that.
Yeah. So we talked about it being a very short review. So should we move on to the other? So we also wanted to review very briefly. So last night, Jared was over here at my house again with some of our friends and family again. We just had a bit of a pizza night. And it's because, so Jared and I, our wives, who happen to be sisters as well as another friend, they decided to go for a trip to a shop called Spotlight, which is all craft,
we're not
sewing,
wealthy.
Yeah.
And we're glad for
it. Yeah, it's kind of I remember being a young boy and my mum and sister going, and I hated every minute of it. It was,
scarred for life.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But if you're...
I think I've been once.
Yeah, but if you're a sewing, embroidering, curtain-making kind of person, go for your life. It's, crafty, that kind of stuff. Anyway, so they had a day out. We decided, all right, we'll get our families together. So I pulled out a board game that I just bought recently. It's called House of Danger. Now, if that is familiar to any of you, it's because it's also the title of a Choose Your Own Adventure book. So if any of you have read Choose Your Own Adventure books when you were young, or now as adults, maybe, I don't know, whatever you like, you'll know that there are tons and tons of them. Jared, how many books do you think you went through as a child?
Hard to count. Probably over 100
of those things. I agree.
A regular cycle at the library.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I used to get them from the library. I actually started buying them. I remember they used to be like a dollar each or something at the, at the local bookshop. And I've got maybe 50 to 100 sitting on a bookshelf in the back. And I encourage my son to read them sometimes.
Do you have House of Danger?
I think I actually do have House of Danger, yeah.
Well, you can go and cheat.
Yeah. I don't remember. I haven't read it in a long time. But basically, they're starting to turn these books into board games. Now, the idea of the book is that you read and then you're presented with a choice. You know, if you turn left, go to page 51. If you pull your parachute cord, go to page 61, whatever it's going to be.
And after a little while, you've got bookmarks in about 10 or 11 different
spots. Yeah, that's right, to go back in case your character meets an unfortunate end or something. So what they've done is they've board gamified these books. So there are two board games at the moment, but I'll just talk about this one today. Basically, this one has been set up in a way that that there are cards that you read, which are the pages. So you read the story and you make your choices, but then when you make your choices, you have to complete challenges, and to complete challenges, you roll dice. And it's got this danger meter, which rises or lowers depending on choices that you make. And then it's got this psychic meter because your character is slightly psychic.
Ours was very slightly.
Yeah, very slightly. But basically, if your psychic meter is at a certain level, and it said, for example, it might say, if your psychic meter is above 2, pick up this clue and it will give you an extra clue. So, and you collect clues along the way to sort of solve the story. This game is divided into 5 chapters. Each chapter goes roughly for about an hour, and you just spend your time going through and collecting clues and trying to work out the mystery.
And trying not to die.
So, Jared, what did you think about it? Yesterday was the first time that you tried it out. What were your thoughts?
It was a bit of a, like I mentioned, a bit of a difference to an actual book. So I did say before about the 10 or 11 bookmarks. This one, you get no bookmarks.
That's right.
We started with a real hesitancy to go anywhere. Because unlike, say, a Dungeons and Dragons or a fighting fantasy or a one where you're role-playing and you've got free access and movement, going to one section may cut you off from ever going to another section again.
Yeah.
So we would spend 10 minutes wondering whether it's a good idea to go down a tunnel or look at a statue or wander through a hedge maze or whatever.
Go and see a chimpanzee playing the violin was a strange one.
We didn't know anything funny about that.
Yeah.
His hypnotic music, yes. So that was a bit of a, not so much a rude awakening, but it was a, hang on, and then we ended up getting supposedly killed pretty quickly, which made us less psychic. But growing into it, it does play a bit like a Dungeons and Dragons sort of role-playing game without the huge amount of background knowledge and lore that you might need to know.
And 30 dice.
this was, I suppose, an unpack and play.
Yeah.
We didn't do it. We looked at a picture for 2 minutes while you set up, and that was the amount of our background that we needed to know.
Yeah.
As opposed to some of these other more complex games where you could spend the evening reading and still not quite sure how you're supposed to start.
Yeah.
So in terms of ease of and accessibility of joining in, very good.
Yeah.
I love how they say the amount of players.
Yes. 1 to 99 players can play, yeah.
Because all of you make the decision.
Like I said last night, I really want to play this with 99 people and watch them have a vote about which page to turn to. That'd be hilarious.
About where to go, yeah. And it's something that can be done. You probably do need an adult to sort of facilitate because there is a bit of moving, shuffling, finding things. But you mentioned you're playing it with your son who's just gone 11 now.
Yes.
And he was fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a great time. Yeah. So my son and I did the first chapter. You guys had got the first chapter. So looking forward to exploring that more. But and it was about $35, which is really cheap for a board game of that, with that much to do in it. So yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it too. So if anyone else has had a go at any of the Choose Your Own Adventure board games, the second one, I forgot what it's called, Master of Evil something, whatever. I think it's more of an outer space-based one, but yeah.
Yeah, some sort of conflict with the evil master power mind or something.
Whatever, yeah. Long, convoluted title. As a lot of Choose Your Adventure books actually did have it. I found that they were probably the better ones rather than the single word titled ones. Yeah, and I'm waiting. I don't know if anyone's read this. Did you ever read the Space Hawk series in Choose Your Own Adventure?
No,
so
I didn't get that.
It was the most exciting thing I ever read. It was a Choose Your Own Adventure story over 6 books. So you obviously complete a book at a time. But it was about you being like a fighter pilot in a spaceship. So very Star Wars-like. And I would love to see the Space Hawks be turned into a board game. I would be all over that one. Yeah. And so I know Damien would too, because I got him to read the series as well. Yeah. So, let's finish our episode because I think we've reached about the hour stage now, haven't we? Yeah. So, let's finish episode 24 up there. So as follow-up, what we wanted to do basically is just to share some of the shows on SQPN which have had some similar topics to us. So last year, Caroline and I, in episode 23, in our last episode for the year, we talked about that beautiful film, It's a Wonderful Life, and we didn't know that American Catholic History, which is another podcast on this network, was actually preparing a podcast on Frank Capra, who was the director. So we'll put a link to that in our show notes. It's a great episode. I actually loved learning a lot more about Frank Capra, a lot of things about him I didn't know in that podcast. So I recommend that one. I've already talked about Secrets of Star Wars and Secrets of TV and Movies, talking about The Rise of Skywalker. And I also wanted to mention that in episode 23, Caroline and I also talked about the Star of Bethlehem and some possible scientific explanations for it and whatever. Well, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World did a whole episode on that topic and on the Magi and who they were. So I'd recommend that episode as well if you'd like to know more about that as well. So thank you very much for joining us for episode 24 of The Catholics of Oz. This is the part where we normally thank patrons, but I actually forgot to ask Dom in time. Sorry, Dom. Please don't fire us for a list of patrons. So thank you to all the patrons who have been contributing to SQPN. Thank you to anyone who joined up recently as well in the latest giving campaign at the end of last year. All of you make a massive difference. The patrons are the reason why SQPN exists, and we're incredibly grateful that you do that, because our little show from the southeast corner of Australia is sitting on SQPN because of you, because you help with that. So if you are a patron, thank you so much. And if you'd like to become a patron, you can join them as well by visiting sqpn.com/give. Patrons get some bonus content, so they do get some, there's a gift that you receive for becoming a patron. So there are some books related to some of the different shows that are there. But also there are some, patrons get to help pick some of the topics that end up on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. What else have we been able to do as patrons? I'm trying to remember now. Some great stuff anyway. Oh, there are special episodes of Secrets of Star Trek, which are released only to patrons first, and then they come out later on. So there's lots of bonus things coming. So the more patrons, the more Star Quest can do. So sign up. also, if you have any thoughts, though, about anything that we've discussed today, You can send us feedback by finding our show at sqpn.com/oz, spelt O-Z. Our show notes are there as well. Leave comments on Facebook. So our episodes are advertised on Facebook at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. So when you see our episodes being advertised there, please feel free to leave some feedback, as people have so kindly done last year. And also we have our own Facebook page, facebook.com/CatholicsOfOz. And I've noticed a few new people have come and joined us, so that's really good. So when you do join, let us know who you are and tell us about you and things that you've heard about from the show. And we can also be reached by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Jerry, thank you so much for coming back to the podcast and for joining us this in the new year for episode 24.
Very good. Glad to have been here.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sant. Happy New Year, and thank you for listening to the Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.